G8 and His Battle Aces, Squadron of Corpses, by Robert Hogan, Chapter 8. Von Grau disappears. For a long moment G8 didn't answer. His brain was spinning like a top. At the 113th, he repeated in the mouthpiece. Why, that was where he broke off suddenly. Tried to make his voice more confident and assuring. The old war dog was pretty badly shaken. I'll go over there at once. But before I go, I have something to tell you, Genera. I think it's good news. It's about the first break we've had. Things were beginning to look more encouraging before you told me about the 113th, yes? Asked the general. We went over to meet those four German aces, but we didn't have much luck. We could see tracers entering their helmets. The bullets were evidently ripping into their skulls. But they didn't, exclaimed the general. What are you talking about? Those bullets, G8 went on, didn't kill those supposedly resurrected aces. And they didn't enter their skulls either. I'm positive of that. I don't understand, the general said haltingly. Neither did we, until I took a bunch of bullets out of my gun belt and started hacking at one with a jackknife. Those bullets have a very clever construction. A thin metal jacket covers the outside, giving the appearance of a real steel-coated bullet. But the covering is as strong as tinfoil. I tried them out on a helmet and they didn't do more than make a few holes in the outer layer. You mean, demanded the general, that we've been getting faulty ammunition? I'll say it's faulty, returned G8. I'm going to look into it at once. Good, said the general. I'll start an immediate check at all fields. Fine, said G8. But I'm assured of one thing so far. There's a trick to this whole business. This voodooism with its white and black magic had me pretty well fooled up until a few minutes ago. You see, they do some very unbelievable things, down in the island of Haiti. It's impossible to explain. But when we find false bullets in our guns, that takes out an awful lot of the supernatural. The general's voice carried a brighter tone. Splendid, he said. I knew you could do it, G8. I wouldn't be too sure, the master spy finished. We're just beginning. These funny bullets are really the first clue. But I believe we're getting somewhere and that we're on the right track. I'll advise you as soon as anything else turns up. G8 hung up the phone and turned. He strode straight through the door and out into the hangar. He called the hangar sergeant. Say, G8 demanded, how about your supply of bullets?
Got plenty, sir, the sergeant answered. Just received a new supply yesterday.
We were about cleaned out until then. G8 nodded with satisfaction. That's exactly what I wanted to know. His eyes narrowed. Sergeant, did you test those bullets?
Yes, sir.
I had everyone tested for size and we tried them on the range, sir.
They made nice holes in the targets?
G8 asked.
Yes, sir.
I tried them there myself.
Notice anything queer?
G8 asked.
A grin of slight embarrassment came over the face of the sergeant.
Nothing particular, sir. Except that I guess my shooting must be sort of going haywire. I couldn't hit the bullseye so well. But I guess it's just me.
Maybe, said G8.
Tell me this. You use a paper target, don't you, when firing on the range?
Yes, sir.
We put up a new one every time we try a new bunch of ammunition.
That's what I thought, G8 said.
So the bullets made nice holes in the paper, did they?
Yes, sir.
Same as usual, sir.
G8 took one of the shells out of his pocket,
opened his jackknife and began to whittle. The sergeant watched him suspiciously.
Hey!
What the?
That's what I said when I tried this the first time a few minutes ago. Let's go and get some more shells in the arming room.
Some of these new ones.
They went into the room where the machine guns were repaired and the bullets inspected for size.
A new box of ammunition stood on the end of the bench, partly empty.
G8 took out one of the shells.
Again he applied his jackknife.
You see, he said. They're all alike,
an outer covering of a sort of harder tinfoil. And inside they are filled with this plaster of pans-like substance.
Gee, Captain, the sergeant said with frightened, staring eyes, I hope you don't think I had anything to do with this.
Of course you didn't, G8 told him. I think before long we'll hear that almost all the fields have been supplied with this defective ammunition.
They tore open case after case of the new ammunition.
It was all the same.
But holy gee, Captain, the sergeant insisted, maybe it's my fault. I should have found it out myself.
But they tested all right, sir.
Look, I'll show you.
He picked up a small, metal block with a hole just the size of the regulation machine gun cartridge. He slipped one of the bullets into it.
See, sir?
He said. They're exactly the size.
Of course they are, G8 said.
That's one of the damnable parts of it. They're pretty hard to detect.
But they shot all right on the range, the sergeant admitted.
They made holes in the target.
Yes, but they wouldn't have done so well in a wooden target.
Hereafter see that your targets for trying out bullets are made of inch-thick oak.
If the bullets go through that, we'll be sure that they'll kill a man at 100 yards or more.
But gee, sir.
I didn't.
Of course you didn't, Sergeant, G8 assured him.
That's just a new rule that I'm making around here. We never suspected anything like this. Don't lose any sleep over it. It's not your fault. Just change the ammunition in the belts and fill them up with what good ammunition you have left.
Bull met him at the door as he returned to the apartment.
General's on the wire, he said. I think he's got some hot news for you.
G8 rushed in and picked up the receiver again.
Hello, General.
G8, the General's voice came back. I've just had a checkmate of the various fields behind the front. This damnable thing seems to be throughout our whole Air Corps. Other pilots report seeing their tracers go into the enemy cockpit without affecting the German pilots in any way.
Order all of the ammunition junked, G8 said instantly.
I have done so already, the general answered. But it leaves us very short of machine gun ammunition for air fighting.
I can imagine, G8 said. We'll have to make the best of it.
I'm going over to the 113th, now. If anything turns up, you can get me over there.
Right, said the general.
And if it does, let's hope it will be good.
Let's hope it will, General.
Goodbye, sir.
Until later.
G8 snatched his helmet and goggles from the fireplace and jerked his head to the door.
Come on, he said. We're going over to the 113th.
The three aces watched the HISOS warm and then they took the air.
It was almost dark when they landed on the tarmac of the 113th.
Men came to meet them as they climbed out of their cockpits. Jittery men, with the pallor of fear on their faces. Their legs wobbled, and they puffed frantically at cigarettes, lighting one from another half gone, as though each might be their last. G8 and his buddies had landed as near the hospital as possible. The master spy now led the way toward the building. Outside the hospital door, Bull hesitated.
Do I have to go in here and watch some more of this?
He asked.
Not this time, G8 assured him.
You'll need all your nerve perhaps, later on.
Nippy, you can stay here and keep Bull company, if you like.
Nippy nodded. That was his only answer. He stayed.
G8 was met inside by a medical officer, a lieutenant.
He introduced himself, got instant recognition.
He didn't say which four men he meant.
Didn't need to. The lieutenant seemed to know instantly. Seemed to realize that those four men, who lay stricken with a strange malady, were the only important patients in the hospital at that moment.
He led them down the corridor and stopped before a closed door. Taking from his pocket a face mask, he held it toward G8.
What's that for?
Demanded the master spy.
We're not taking any chances with this, the lieutenant admitted.
It may be plague.
And then again his voice lowered. It may be the black magic that the Germans are talking about.
We're not taking any chances.
Then he was tying the mask over G8's mouth and nose. It smelled strongly of a disinfectant as a spy breathed through it.
The lieutenant held the door open, stepped behind it and closed it again after G8 had gone inside. The room held four hospital beds. Each contained a still form. Eyes stared in a dull, glassy look.
Several medical officers were in the room, the highest ranking one a captain.
G8 addressed him in a very low voice, how are they coming?
He asked.
The captain shook his head.
No hope, he admitted.
Understand there was a chap by the name of Randall who died recently. He jerked his head toward the four doomed men on the cots just like this.
Yes, G8 said. I was there when he died. He just wasted away.
Heart got weaker.
And he was in perfect condition when he showed the first signs of affliction.
That's it, nodded the captain.
That's just it.
These four are going the same way.
Have you tried a heart stimulant?
G8 asked.
Yes, the captain said. We tried it on this one.
He pointed to the pilot on the end cot.
G8 went over and stared down at him.
Why, he said in astonishment, that's Johnson.
Yes, nodded the captain.
Johnson was skipper.
The 113th is losing a mighty good man, sir.
I'm afraid so, G8 said.
What effect does the heart stimulant have?
Strangest effect you can imagine, answered the captain.
It seemed to work in reverse.
Made his heart weaker instead of stronger.
He lifted the left arm of the doomed man, nodded to G8.
Here, he said, feel his pulse.
G8 could feel a very, very faint surging of blood.
But that wasn't what made him half lose his grip on the arm the moment he touched it.
Why, he exclaimed, the fellow's almost as cold as a corpse.
Yes, the captain said. That's another symptom.
Did you notice that about Randall?
No, admitted G8.
I didn't touch him.
He pressed the pulse harder now.
That's funny, he went on. The heart action seems to be gone entirely. I can seem to find it.
Quickly the captain took the arm. He put the stethoscope that was already around his neck into his ears, pulled back the sheet and placed the other end of it against the place where Johnson's heart should be.
A moment later he straightened.
Taking the ends of the instrument from his ears, he nodded slowly.
"Johnson's dead," he pronounced.
G8 and the captain had been standing between Johnson's cot, which was at the end of the row of four, and the next one to it. G8 turned now to the limp form on his other side. He lifted the arm, felt the pulse.
"This one's still going strong," he ventured a moment later.
The captain felt it, after pulling the sheet up over the face of the one who had died.
"Yes," he admitted. "That's the baffling part of the whole business. The minute they get this damnable disease, they don't act like human beings anymore. Medicine, stimulants, nothing acts the way it should. I mean,
Johnson was one of the toughest fighters on the front, but the minute this thing hit him, he didn't give two hoots to live. We figured because he was the huskiest, and would have probably the most stored up vitality, we'd try a heart stimulant. You see what happened?"
G8 heard the door open behind him. The lieutenant who had brought him was standing there, an operating mask tied over his mouth and nose.
"Phone call for you," he said, looking straight at G8.
G8 turned, strode out into the hall. The lieutenant closed the door and led the way to the main office. Through the windows, G8 could see that it was dark outside now. A telephone stood on a desk with the receiver off the hook. He picked it up instantly and answered.
"Bad news, this time," came the general's voice. "Von Greinel has escaped from the prison camp."
To be continued.